Malekna, Honorable Mkeka, Honorable Sister was on the please reconnect, Honorable Mikalaki, Honorable Radebe,
recording in progress,
Mala, Honorable Seleku. Okay, and I just had a chat with Honorable Bartlett, who was also trying to log in. Honorable members, welcome. And I think on the platform we also have the Honorable Deputy Minister for Correctional Services, and I would imagine the team from the department. Welcome to all. In terms of today's meeting, Honorable members, we'll be dealing with the Correctional Services budget and ADP. And in addition to that, we'll also be considering the our committee report on the Home Affairs budget and APP. Perhaps I should also indicate to Honourable Members that we, Parliament rather, received a communique from the Presidency informing Parliament that yesterday and today that the Presidency was holding a presidential economic retreat, and given that ministers and or deputy ministers were not totally available, but I think the deputy minister is able to join us, and I think we thank you very much, deputy minister, for being part of our meeting. Our members, what we had asked the department to focus on in addition to the budget and APP was to give us a provincial overview of the state of correctional service facilities, overcrowding and challenges, an overview of remand detainees in correctional centers provincially, and measures that have been undertaken to improve facilities in relation to remand detainees. We also requested an overview of the number of officials in relation to inmates at correctional centers, safety and also give us an indication in terms of how they would want to take us through. But let me thank the department as well for that detailed information, which allows these members a much better picture of what is happening with correctional services in our various provinces. That being said, Deputy Minister, I think from our side, we have not received any apologies from honourable members. And I'm sure as the meeting continues, some members, I think Honourable Bartlett has joined us as well, will join us. Let me then hand over to yourself, Deputy Minister, and once again welcome you and your team to this meeting. Deputy Minister?
Well, good morning, Chair President, to the members of the Select Committee on Security and Justice. Thank you for inviting us once again to your meeting so that we can share with you our position regarding annual performance plans as well as responding to specific issues that you requested us to address you on. I'm going to give what I think is a short introductory presentation. Right after the department will give more detailed present. Okay. 2022-2023 annual performance plan for the department is being presented at a time when South Africa is still dealing with and recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic, which has profound economic implications globally. The implementation 2025 revised strategic plan will be undertaken in the context of the NDP, which is the country's plan, the 2019-2024 medium-term strategic framework, and the DCS vision 2068. The department chair has assessed the alignment of this plan with national planning instruments, including the National Development Plan and the five-year implementation plan, the revised medium-term strategic framework, and the National Annual Strategic Plan, which articulates plans to give the national government seven strategic priorities effect. The spread of the disease was limited and managed in our operational facilities through the risk-adjusted strategy and standard operating procedures for the preparedness, detection, and response to the pandemic. That is a restricted daily regime, including limited movement of inmates, but there have been adverse effects on the mental health and well-being of inmates and an increased risk to society that offenders are released without effective rehabilitation. Indeed, considering the unprecedented health and safety challenges in correctional settings brought on by the pandemic and with the vulnerability towards the virus as a major concern, one key intervention has been the continuous testing and monitoring of symptomatic cases to rapidly detect any new infection. The vaccination rollout within the department is being monitored through the established vaccination rollout coordinating committee comprising departmental healthcare professionals. The virus makes no distinction of place, race, or culture, hence vaccination is the bulwark against the pandemic in correctional facilities, just as anywhere else. The vaccination program is critical to achieve GPS population immunity, to protect employees and inmates against the risk of severe disease, and to enhance occupational health and safety by stemming the spread of the virus. The department recorded a total of 23,426 official cases, 316,364 inmates that have been vaccinated as at the 25th of May 2022. The rate of overcrowding in correctional facilities still remains a challenge, with some correctional facilities reporting an occupancy level of 275%. This challenge continues to stretch resources, hampering health, injuries, and unnatural deaths. In an effort to curb the spread of the virus infection, overcrowded correctional facilities, the department implemented the 2020-2021 special parole dispensation, in which 14,005 qualifying offenders were released on parole. Although the overcrowding in correctional facilities that increased to 27% in the 2020-2021 financial year, it is important to note that the implementation of a special parole suspension is not the final solution to overcrowding management, but rather a short-term relief. The department will prioritize the implementation of the recently approved overcrowding reduction strategy, which sets out clear direct and indirect measures to manage overcrowding. Given the current negative economic outlook, strengthening partnership with relevant stakeholders will ensure acceleration of service delivery, and these are some of the innovative alternatives that will ensure that the department delivers more with less resources available, taking into consideration the high economic reality. The department chair continues to function within constrained budgetary provisions and an inability to fill all vacancies in line with national initiatives to cap the country's public sector wage bill has recently remained. We'll continue to build upon the lesson learned so far from the management ourselves. Our efforts are ultimately aimed at ensuring the safety and security of our citizens as we rebuild South African economy and to seek to improve the quality of life of the people of South Africa, all of them. There have been no updates to the constitutional, legislative and political mandate for the department. The mandate as stated in 2020-2025 revised strategic plan remains relevant. The department remains committed to strengthening the effectiveness of the criminal justice system, reducing levels of crime and corruption, and promoting community involvement as outlined in the National Development Plan. The department will continue to support the implementation of the district development model through its production workshops, agricultural activities, arts and culture, and community projects that promote self-sufficiency by working in collaboration with metros, district municipalities, and all relevant entities. The strategic framework on self-sufficiency and sustainability supports collaboration with metro and district municipalities and entities in the production of commodities required by the department through offender labor. This in 2030, as set out in the National Development Plan, continues to be South Africa's guide towards better living conditions for its citizens. The department supports and contributes to priority 6, that is social cohesion and safe communities, priority 2, economic transformation and job creation, priority 3, education, skills and health, and priority 1, a capable, ethical and developmental state. The department has recently developed the New Beginning and Gender-Based Violence Awareness Program to create awareness among male and female offenders on the negative impact of GBV crime. The program contributes to the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, as well as RMTSF Priority 6, that is social cohesion and safe community. In addition, the department has developed and is implementing correctional programs which focus specifically on the needs of female offenders. The objective is to create awareness and empower female offenders on areas such as general life, skills, relationships, addictive behavior, and career building. On the budget overview, the department will continue to implement key interventions outlined in the medium-term strategic framework 2019-2024 for the remaining strategic period. However, prioritization of intervention must be done within the context of the overall fiscal strategy. This will require that the department prioritize towards the most impactful interventions. The overall budget of the department is projected to grow at an annual average rate of 2% from 25.9 billion rand to 26.7 billion rand in 2024-2025. The department has a responsibility to keep inmates safe in correctional facilities in safe custody until they are legally released. While adhering strictly to its function, the department acknowledges the fundamental rights of inmates which are embodied in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa as amended. It is therefore necessary to incarcerate and treat all inmates in a humane manner and to create a climate which is conducive to rehabilitation. The department is further committed to maintaining universally acceptable standards and norms with regard to the treatment of offenders and in particular those norms, standards and guidelines laid down by the United Nations on the treatment of offenders. Over the medium term, the department will focus on ensuring humane, safe and secure detention, need-based rehabilitation, and the effective reintegration of offenders into communities. An estimated 58.4%, that is 45.8 billion rand of the department's spending over the MTS period is allocated to the incarceration program over the 3-year period. The work of the department remains labor intensive, 66.9%, that is 52.5 billion rand of the total budget over the 3-year period is earmarked for compensation of employees. Chairperson and members of the Select Committee, it is important to note that due to the historical classification of correctional officials at the coal face as security personnel, their compensation and related expenses are allocated to incarceration. However, due to the shift in service delivery orientation from prison through incarceration to rehabilitation, development and social reintegration, personnel who are classified as security officials in terms of the budget are in practice responsible for delivering all services across the value chain of corrections, which encompasses rehabilitation, development, care, and social reintegration of offenders. The department is undergoing a process of organizational redesign that is reviewing the organization business process and structure that will in turn translate into a reconfiguration of the budget allocation. The department has spent 27.7 million rand for the procurement of COVID-19 supplies for the 2021-2022 financial year. That is for the period ending December 31st, 2021. Over the 2022 MTEF period, the department has budgeted 244.7 million rand for its response to the pandemic. During the detailed presentation of the budget, the department will articulate the detailed allocation of funding towards respective economic classification of expenditure for the five programs of administration, incarceration, remand detention, rehabilitation, care, and social integration. In conclusion, Chairperson, honorable members, new strains of the COVID-19 virus continue to present high levels of uncertainty for economic growth in 2022. But the economic sensitivity to new ways and strains appears to be decreasing. Vaccination in most achieved approach to lockdown restrictions, the strain on healthcare
Deputy Minister? Remember, is it just me or is it all of us that cannot hear the Deputy Minister?
All of us, Chair.
All of us, Chair. Okay. But I think the Deputy Minister was concluding. I'm not sure, Gershwin, if you could perhaps deal with this issue in the meantime, and that's the department, the acting commissioner, is he with us?
Good.
Yes. So given that the deputy minister, I see, is off the platform, should the department then just continue, as he had indicated, that he would be taking us through the presentation? Also give us an indication how you intend doing that. I know the other four presentations have details, which I think are important for members personally, but also when they do oversight in their various provinces. But if you could try and take us through the presentation so that we get sufficient time to engage yourself in terms of comments and of questions, then we'll take it from there.
Greetings, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members of the Select Committee on Security and Justice. My name is Makgotsi Samuel Tobagale. I'm the Acting National Commissioner for the Department of Correctional Services. I am with a full team of management, and other colleagues of the management team have also connected. We will then proceed, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, to present the main presentation. The other four presentations that were submitted as per directive from the committee, the information will also be covered in the main presentation. We will then be able to engage based on the additional information that we have provided through the four other presentations. CDC Katenga, who is the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for strategic management, will do the first part of the presentation. The second part of the presentation that deals with the budget and finance will be done by the Deputy Commissioner responsible for financial management. And then we will then take the platform back, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, to the committee to then engage with us. With that, Honorable Chairperson, let me also acknowledge the presence of our Deputy Minister, Honorable Holomis. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting National Commissioner. We're in your hands, so please take over this process. I think the Deputy Minister is with us or not, but anyway, please continue because I'm sure he's familiar with the presentation anyway.
Sorry, Chair, I am back, but I have to apologize. I understand that while I was still proceeding with my presentation or remarks, I got cut off. But I hope that the greater part of what I meant to say was conveyed to the committee.
Yes, it was, Deputy Minister. Actually, in actual fact, you got cut off when we were concluding. So, yeah, thank you very much. Acting Commissioner, as you've directed,
thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. I am going to be fairly brief in my overview of the contextual issues that were considered in our planning process. And then just give an indication of the budget programs, and then maybe just give a brief indication of our contribution to the district development model as captured in the current strategic or in the current annual performance plan. So if I can take the members to slide 8. As the DHM had mentioned, that our legislative mandate has not changed. However, in the current medium-term strategic framework, 2020 to 2025, we are contributing to the national development agenda by contributing directly and indirectly to the 7 priorities of government. Now, in terms of our direct contribution to the priorities of government, we are contributing to priority 6, which is social cohesion and safe communities, which talks to building safer communities in terms of the national development plan. Our performance indicators in the annual performance plan are the percentage of parolees who do not have violations of their conditions, the percentage of probationers without violations, the number of victims who participate in restorative justice processes, and we have a cross-cutting indicator which talks to the national strategic plan on gender-based violence. However, throughout our organizational value chain, we also contribute indirectly to the 7 priorities. That is, in terms of priority 2, which talks to economic transformation and job creation, we have performance indicators that address the number of economic opportunities facilitated for parolees and probationers, the percentage of youth employed within the department, percentage compliance with economic with the employment equity plan in terms of filling positions within the department, and also the percentage of tenders above 30 million that we award to designated groups. Designated groups, which would include women, youth, and people with disabilities. The other priority that we also contribute to is priority one, a capable, ethical and developmental state. The performance indicators in our APP are the percentage of investigations completed for reported allegations, the percentage of officials charged and found guilty for corrupt activities, and then percentage of compliance with our employment equity plans with regards to the employment of members within the senior management service and those people with living with disabilities. And thirdly, or fourthly, we contribute to priority three, which talks to education, skills, and health. The performance indicators in the APP are the percentage of sentenced offenders with correctional sentence plans who have completed correctional programs, percentage of offenders participating in long occupational skills programs, percentage of offenders participating in short occupational skills programs, and the percentage of offenders participating in TVET college programs. If I may take the chair and members through to slide 11, and where we are basically saying that for the five-year strategic plan, we have an impact or an intended impact which looks at having safe and empowered communities through sustainable economic development, which is our overall impact over the five-year period and beyond. And we have six outcomes that measure how we progress towards that. And that talks to the, all the programs within the department. So we have improved safety and security of inmates, parolees, probationers, officials, stakeholders, assets and information, improved case management processes of inmates, increased access to needs-based rehabilitation programs to improve moral fiber, successful reintegration of all of those under the care of the department, ensuring a healthy incarcerated population, and to have a high-performing ethical organization, which would result in the overall impact over the five-year period. In terms of our considerations, when we were in the planning process, which I think the Deputy Minister has spoken to quite extensively, just to indicate that we are operating, and I'm now on slide 12, and the key issues that I'd just like to lift from there is that in terms of our budgetary constraints, that the fiscus is no longer able to provide additional funding, and therefore we have to be able to reprioritize within our current budgets. However, when we look at the external environment, the issue of the increase in contact crimes such as murder, rape, and sexual offenses have been recorded over the ensuing period. And coupled with this, also exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdowns, is the issue of the increase in unemployment. So all of those elements would be pointing towards a caseload within the correctional services environment increasing. If I can take the members through to slide 13, just to say that within our own environment, we are quite acutely aware of the security risks that that surround the operations of the department, and as such, from a security perspective, we are continuously improving our methodologies and also improving the technology that we deploy in terms of our security environment. With regards to incarceration, as the DM indicated, that whilst we had the special parole dispensation, which assisted in relieving pressure on the population, we still are overcrowded within our facilities. And therefore, the continuous implementation of the overcrowding reduction strategy is something that we will employ going forward. And with regards to remand detainees, we are going to continue engaging robustly with the justice cluster to ensure that the load of remand detainees is managed in terms of them attending the court's proceedings and ensuring that their bail conditions are reviewed in a timely manner. With regards to rehabilitation, the DM also did indicate that we have the self-sufficiency and sustainability framework, which we are rolling out, and that is aimed at ensuring that we are able to generate revenue within the department's capacity and also make us less reliant on the fiscus going forward. Slide 14, with regards to social reintegration, within the period of the hard lockdowns, our efforts in terms of the victim-offender dialogues and victim-offender mediations, which is part of our restorative justice processes, were affected because of the requirements for social distancing. However, now that those restrictions have been lifted, efforts in that regard are being increased, but also that we are partnering with social partners such as NGOs, FBOs, and community-based organizations and communities at large to ensure that our efforts in this regard are accelerated going forward. Maybe just to give an overview, we'll go to slide 16, which just gives us an overview per region of, in terms of the clustering of the provinces within the department, but we cover all 9 provinces with the various management areas as indicated, which give us a total of 243 correctional centers across the length and breadth of the country. Slide 17. This just highlights the overcrowding challenge that was alluded to earlier, where we say that nationally we have the accommodation space of 108,804 beds. However, as at the 1st of April 2022, we had a population of 143,223 inmates, which put us at a level of 31.63% of overcrowding. If I move to slide 19, those are just the budget programs and the associated sub-programs, and the performance indicators are detailed in the ensuing slides. But I think in terms of our engagement, I will not go through the detail there, but we can engage as the members would ask us questions as we go forward. If we go to slide 54, here we are just indicating that as a department we are acutely aware of the potential pitfalls that would face us in trying to achieve our objectives, and therefore we have considered these 10 strategic risks that we are monitoring on an ongoing basis. And we have put in mitigation measures to ensure that they do not materialize, or where they do, that we are able to react accordingly in order to ensure that the severity of such an occurrence does not disrupt our business. So that was just to highlight that. And then I think Chair and members, from slides 58 to 61, we have just highlighted some of the projects that we are implementing in terms of the self-sustainability framework and our social reintegration framework, where we are interacting with partners through various
Recording in progress.
And indicated the number of beds. And under compensation of employees, we have a carry-through amount from the last financial year of 622 million for the payment of the non-pensionable cash allowances for level 12 down in lieu of the non-implementation of the last leg of the wage agreement. And what was allocated last financial year was 622. The same amount is carried through in the current financial year, only in the first year of the MTS. So in the two outer years of the MTS, we do not have any allocation. So it depends on what would be the discussions between labor and government and an employer. Then what it means is that whatever financial indication, National Treasury would then have to additionally allocate the indication of that to the departmental COE ceiling. If you look at the public service revenue council resolution 1 of 2021, there's two aspects. There's an aspect of the non-pensionable cash allowances which are paid monthly, and also the second aspect of the 1.5% for pay progression. In terms of the 1.5% pay progression, all government departments have got to self-finance but within our own baseline. If we then quickly move to slide 64, we have as a department reprioritized from our own allocation an amount of 54.1 million under the program rehabilitation for the implementation and recapitalization of our agricultural farms and production workshops for the implementation of the self-sufficiency and storage framework. We, as the team said, indicated, as a department, we self-funded our response to COVID-19 for both the obligation that we had towards all inmates and to a particular extent our officials. We reprioritized the budget and that prioritization in the first year, which is 2021 went through Parliament. So over the MTS, we continue to then reprioritize that. But what we have indicated to National Treasury is that if we then in our own analysis, the financial obligation decrease in terms of what we have provided, then we should be allowed the space to reprioritize first to where we have cut the money to be able to fund COVID-19 response in the department. In our case, the COVID-19 allocation fund the PPE, we fund the medical equipment, the medicine specifically is for all inmates and laboratory services, NHLS. And we had raised with National Treasury our concerns as a department where NHLS had increased the laboratory services rate for us and the Department of Defense, not in line with the normal average inflation, and specifically in their letter, they are saying increased rate only for GCS. There is imagine that is abnormal, and also defense. We had then given the National Treasury that at least NHLS should treat us as a department the same way that they're treating the other government departments that are utilizing their services. We then move change like 66 indicating to the committee the allocations that are within our baseline where there are certain conditions that have been set in our allocation letter and also that are contained in the appropriation bill that was presented to Parliament by the Minister of Finance. In terms of the allocation for infrastructure, the capital portion, the amount is earmarked, and in the first year of the MTF, we've got 360 million, increasing to 472 million in the outer year. In terms of the COE allocation for all government departments, the compensation savings are set and are exclusively appropriated, specifically exclusively appropriated. In other words, the accounting officer, Section 33 power cannot be exercised. Only Parliament can exercise the power to reprioritize away
compensation of employees, and two, compensation of employees. And the amount in terms of our baseline, we had an amount of 17.9 billion in the first year of this year, increasing to 16.929 billion in the outer year. If you look at the COE allocation, it's a carried through baseline that was set yearly past in our department in the 2021 MTF, 2020 to 2021 MTF. The baseline cut around COE was 11 billion and the reversal of the wage agreement incorporated there. That then had an impact in terms of the staff establishment that is funded in the department. The allocations to the judicial inspectorate for correctional services is also earmarked, an allocation of 78.7 million, increasing to 79.9 million in the outer year. The last slide of conditional allocations in our budget is devolved funds from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure for accommodation charges, which is 651 million in the first year of the SCS, increasing to 722 million in the outer year. Leases for private buildings that are occupying the department, mainly from head office, some regional offices, and also community corrections offices that were leasing, an amount of 120 million, increasing to 151 million. And municipal services, which basically accommodate water, electricity, sanitation, an amount of 1.3 billion in the first of the year, increasing to 1.4 billion. If I may, on the two accommodation, even on all the accommodation charges, when we as government was in budget cuts across government departments to fund the free education for those that qualify under the Department of Higher Education, and also to supplement the decrease in terms of revenue collection, in the department who couldn't absorb the allocated budget cuts, we then had to tap into accommodation charges, which is earmarked funding. And we did communicate with the National Treasury, we did communicate with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure at that time, but we are faced with a situation where we're building a quarter basis of accommodation charges for all government buildings that are occupying, including correctional centers. DPWI continues to build the department on a quarterly basis based on the old allocation, which was over a billion. And we've been engaging them, and we've been engaging National Treasury. We had a series of meetings between the three parties, but in terms of the billing, there's still no breakthrough. So what you then see when we table the annual report and when we disclose amounts that are payable to other government entities under the PMTE, which is the entity, Property Management Trading Entity under the DPWI, there's over a billion or two of unconfirmed amounts. That is mainly accommodation charges, so we can only pay what has been allocated in our budget. On leases, the amount is earmarked, but the extra fee always is over what is allocated, resulting into, on an annual basis, us having to the return type funding that is targeted for other projects to be able to supplement the budget. Same with municipal services. Municipal services, on an annual basis, we spend in excess of the allocated budget almost 200 million more, but it means that within the program, items allocated for something else, we have them to supplement the allocation. These issues, consistently we raise them during MTS processes, during E&E processes, in our write-up with National Treasury to see what has been allocated in terms of the goals, a fund is not necessarily enough. If we may then, Honorable Chair, look at slide 69, we're presenting the allocation in the five programs and indicating the average growth in the 2022 MTEF, and basically you can see that the slight growth in program one to program two is almost no growth at all, reintegration program, the only program this MPF that has got a negative vote. In the last MPF, it was program administration that had a negative average group over the MPF. If we then, I'm not sure going to go through the allocations for each program. We have also submitted a supplementary presentation that then covers all allocations per program, per economic classification, per region, and in that particular presentation, we do indicate the type of centralized allocation. If we may then jump to slide 86. On slide 86, we are indicating the allocation per economic classification in terms of what is allocated and our compensation of employees, applicable for capital assets. The economic classification that has an average negative growth over the MTEF is compensation of employees, which has got a negative average growth of 0.5%. And the average expenditure of COE over the 2022 MTEF is 67.5%. Goods and services have indicated with all the challenges that we're having, we've got an average growth of 4%, and that average growth is centered around the devolved fund. The devolved fund is on DPWI. That's where you have some form of inflation adjustment on leases and on municipal services. That also, if you look at the municipal services, is even less sad than the average growth. That overall, on average, the different municipalities would then increase their mainly electricity and sanitation and water services. Transfer and subsidies is a 2.4% average growth. I must indicate that in the Department of Correctional Services, under transfers and subsidies, we have a particular scenario where we are still having an obligation to pay for continuation members. Those are members who retired from our department pre-2006 November, who are responsible to pay their medical aid, them and their qualifying dependents. So we do pay GEMS on a monthly basis. This is an issue that there's been some discussions, I think it was pre-COVID, that were started with National Treasury so that the allocation can be taken to the GPF, for that way all pensioners are catered for. We indicated to National Treasury that we are prepared, they can even audit our records, we can even give them up to the funds, whatever, from 2006, how much we have been paying for continuation members, and transfer the allocation to GPF, so that then we do not have an allocation on our baseline that deals with pensioners, whilst in other departments, in medical aid for pensioners and their dependents is under the GPF. It's one area that we may need to resuscitate so that then once finalized, that budget can then go parliamentary processes like from our budget to a national government budget, with GPF is under them. Payment for capital assets, as I've indicated that when we were doing the high overview, level overview, that's the only area where we have at least some averages here. If we then look on slides 88 and 89, we're indicating the basis of this budget across programs, across regions, in terms of the key cost drivers. Our key cost drivers is the parolees, the probation, and our temporary persons, the sentenced inmates and unsentenced inmates. We then, on an annual basis, review our projections over the MTF for all these different population groups and average that per region so that we can then be able to fairly allocate to the various regions in the department. For this particular MTF, we have projected that our average total parolee and supervision cases will increase from 65,000 to 71,000, whilst our average total inmate population we projected that to increase from 173,000 to about 180,000 over the 3 years. In terms of another element of our key cost drivers, is the personnel. We are a labor intensive department, so on slide 89 we are indicating per financial year what has been funded. And just one note, for few incidents when national salary increases the compensation of employees and students, we're given an allocation and we have then to indicate how we, on how many personnel numbers we can afford against that COE allocation care financial year. As you can see on slide 89, mainly the lowest levels support an average negative growth, and only levels 11 to 12 where there's an average growth of 2.5%. But overall, on by the 2022 MTF period, our average growth is about 2% in terms of personnel numbers, and indicates the, also the average growth, average negative in most of the programs, especially program 1, which are more labor-intensive programs, the average negative growth in the department, and only program rehabilitation and care have got positive average growth over the 2022 MTF. In terms of the revenue estimate on slide 91, we are indicating the estimates that we're supposed to be collecting over the MTF. We've now adapted to the COVID reality in terms of our revenue. We're not saying cash revenue collection department, so we rely on basically the revenue in terms of the establishments that we're letting out, where our officials are occupying, and other sources which are more dependent on how much we produce as a department and also the scrap metal. So we then revise accordingly, and only in the first year of the of COVID, which is 2021, that we went through parliamentary processes to adjustment estimates to revise down our revenue. And last financial year, we then indicated to National Treasury that we will stick to what was originally estimated for us, and we slightly over, that we over collected, that will be shown in our annual report in this table, and we then said, let's maintain that and adjust the way we do things with COVID reality. So we are supposed to collect 162 million this financial year, including 276 million in the outer year. On slide 93, Chair, we're indicating the infrastructure investment in terms of upgrading and additions of our correctional facilities and repair and maintenance. The total allocation in the current financial year is 495 million. Which is both maintenance and capital investment, increasing to 626 million. Lastly, in terms of allocations that are above the voted allocation over the MCF for resources, it is the National Skills Fund, Subsistence, and the Global Fund through the National Department of Health. And in terms of NSF, over the MTF, the amount committed is 87 million, Statista committed 14 million, and the Global Fund, I would say approximately 106 million. There is something approximately. They commission dollars, so depending on the strength of the rent, the amount in it will be lesser in actual converted rent value, or a little bit more. So, but we need in test. And it's a funding that started late in one financial year, and it is for a duration of 6 months. My presentation will end there. I will hand over to the acting national commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. This is where our presentation ends. Thank you for the opportunity, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting National Commissioner and the entire management team and Deputy Minister for the presentation. I'm not sure if the Deputy Minister is only on the phone or not. Deputy Minister, I'm going to take questions and comments from honourable members, and perhaps you can come in with the responses. I'm sure for now, unless you have something that you would want to say before we get into that process. If not, I'll then move ahead.
Maybe I can just take advantage of the opportunity to make my concluding remarks, because I understand I was cut off just before I had to talk about to conclude, which was that, in fact, new strains of the SARS-CoV-2 virus continue to present high levels of uncertainty for economic growth in 2022, but economic sensitivity to new waves and strains appears to be decreasing. Vaccination in most parts of the country is rising and new treatments are emerging. The South African government has adopted a more pragmatic approach to lockdown restrictions. The strain on healthcare facilities will determine the level of further restrictions. Government is likely to consider unnecessary pressure on the local economy as a key factor in determining appropriate policy responses to potential COVID-19 and other virus flare-ups. Efficient service delivery is now a universal cost-cutting factor, which is needed to boost confidence and revive long-neglected economic growth drivers. We need to see South Africa embrace the notion of a delivery state characterized by policy implementation, with the private sector playing a strong collaborative role. We need to keep up the momentum with the vaccination program and manage Omicron in ways that create an optimal balance between life and livelihood in 2022, while recognizing that a healthy society and healthy economy go hand in hand. That's the rest of the remarks that I had, and I'd be unable to make. But otherwise, Chairperson, honourable members, the department is ready to answer any questions or make any clarities that are required. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much once again, Deputy Minister. I just have one comment to make before, members can raise their hand if they wish to ask questions in the meantime. Just in terms of the presentation that we received before this meeting and the one that you're presenting, I think there's two slides. You have additional two slides on your slide. So your slide 93 is actually our slide 91. But just bear that in mind, because I'm sure members would have probably prepared themselves based on the presentation we received. But I want to propose that we get the updated presentation if you can send it to our secretariat. Or members, if you can give me an indication by raising your hands, if you wish to make a comment and or ask questions on the presentation. I note the hand of Honourable Bartlett, Honourable Maleka. Okay, that's why there are two hands. I think we're going to start with the two, and if Honourable Mikolakis, I think as we go on, as I note, other Honourable members will take it in that order. Honourable Bartlett?
Yes, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Chair, on slide 31, the target of any of one infrastructure project to be completed in this financial year, I just want to find out in which province is it and where is this project. And then on slide 6, Chairperson, please provide more information on what will be done in respect of those correctional centres that have been proclaimed beyond economic repair. Will more facilities be built, or how will the image be accommodated? On slides 14 to 16, Chairperson, the department indicates there are challenges related to infrastructure and Department of Public Works, and the majority of projects are delayed for a period of 24 months. What is being done to address, and what time frames are in place? On slide 23, Chair, has intervention by the department in respect of integrated security systems yielded any results or any achievement. On slide 25, Chairperson, in terms of interventions required the use of in-house labor using inmates. Please could you provide more information on what you message in this regard? On slide 5, Chair, what alternative measures have been put in place to house the inmates from the correctional centers that are closed or in need to be repaired? On slide 22, what is success rate been to reduce remand detainees via the DCS interventions? What are the remaining challenges, Chair? And what levels of collaboration and measures are in place between DCS and other government departments to reduce overcrowding in correctional centers? And sorry, Chair, I didn't greet good morning to everybody and understand everybody there. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bartlett. The next is Honorable Maleka. Honorable Maleka.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Deputy Minister and the officials present. Chairperson, I want to check on slide 27, the target for implementation of the integrated inmate management systems has been increased from 12% in 2021 and 22 financial year to 16% in 2022 and 2023 over the past financial year. The department has been unable to achieve their target in terms of IIMS. What measures are in place to ensure that this target will be achieved in the current financial year? And what are the problems with implementation? And the other question on slide 82, can the department please finish the committee with the reasons the target of for overcrowding was received, was revised from less than 28% in 2021 and 2022 to less than 32% in 2022 and 2023? And on slide 45, what are the reasons for the target of 90%? For inmates to be screened for diabetes and hypertension, why not 100%? And my other question is on slide 52, refer to the strategic register. What steps will the department take to manage the mitigate against this risk? With regard to indicate strategies to prevent irregular process and wasteful expenditure and inadequate record management strategies, processes and system. Please, can they explain this in more detail as well as the step that will be undertaken to remedy this? And Chairperson, on slide 82, the most affected sub-program is supervision, which has been decreased from 1.170 billion in 2021 and 2022 to 1.073.6 billion in 2022-2023. What are the reasons for this decrease? And how will this affect the service delivery in the supervision component? And the department vacancies, what are the current number of vacancies in the department on a provincial basis? And what is being done to fill vacancies and what time frame has been determined? And Chairperson, what should the official ratio between inmates and officials be? And my last one, Chairperson, can the department should provide the committee with an indication of whether there are sufficient social workers, psychologists and health practitioners for inmates and what the challenges are in this regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maleka, and have I gotten to also welcome you to this committee because this is your first meeting with this committee, and I think Honorable Ndongeni as well, who's also on the platform, who's also a new member of the committee. Honorable Maleka represents the Mpumalanga province and Honorable Ndungeni, the Eastern Cape. Once again, welcome. The next person who raised their hand was Honorable Mpulati. I see your hand is down now, Honorable Mpulati. Do you still want to ask the question?
Yes, please. Sorry, Chair, I don't know
Mpulati.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know what happened there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thanks, Chair. You forgot to mention that...
You were breaking up.
Can you hear me, Chair?
We hear you, and then we don't hear you. So I'm not sure what the problem is.
Let me perhaps try to just change my connection, Chair. Perhaps you might want to give Honorable Ntetwa a chance so that I can quickly sort out my connection, if that's possible.
But we're hearing you fine now, Honorable.
Is it?
Okay.
Perhaps I'll switch off my camera, if that's all right. Honorable Chair, firstly, I think you forgot to mention to our colleagues that they're very lucky to be joining, and welcome to them. The Select Committee is probably the best one to be a part of. That's just a joke. But Chairperson, I've got four questions. The first one would be that it would be interesting to know from the department how the current rise in fuel costs are affecting the department in terms of the budget, especially with regards to the transport of inmates, but just in general, how are the current fuel price increases affecting your budget? Then it also seems like the department is fighting a bit of a losing battle when it comes to overcrowding. I mean, it's expected to remain at about 28-32% over the next few years. We haven't seen many changes and many improvements in that regard. And the bed spaces that are added are really so little that it doesn't make a real impact. Meanwhile, some of the facilities are so dilapidated and beyond repair. What I want to ask is, how does the department intend to deal with these challenges, because they've been coming for quite a long while, especially if new facilities are required to replace aging ones, but we don't necessarily have the budget for that. Then my third question is, why did it take so long to replace the asbestos roofs at Paulsmoor, and why wasn't it done sooner? And then finally, Chairperson, I always have a bit of a problem with the rehabilitation budget, because I think it speaks to the heart of what correctional services are supposed to do. That's why it's not the Department of Prisons. But I also see that this budget is being capped again. How will this impact on the program? And when I ask, how will it impact on the program, if your budget decreases, you have to make cuts somewhere. Where within the rehabilitation program are cuts being made? And what were the considerations when the department actually considered these cuts being made? Those are my four questions for now. Thank you very much, and welcome to our new members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nicolette. Honorable
Nicolette. Thank you very much, Chair. Sorry to raise my hand at last. I was keep on trying and it fell down for some technical reason. Anyway, thanks for allowing me to come in. Some of my question has already been asked. Especially my point of interest, Chair, was that in the SAPS area, we had a major problem in terms of vehicle repayment, particularly because of the long procurement issues policies. I just want to know here in the correctional services, how are they dealing with this matter? And two, Chair, is the issue of the strategy. Nicola maybe has put it very well, because I wanted to know the strategy. what strategy are they embarking, and what are the key areas that they think they can compromise, they can live with, not even compromise, they can live with in terms of this budget that is there with them. I thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mr. Honorable Masumai, your hand has been raised as well. You may come in, Honorable Masumai.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to know from the correctional sense, there is a lot of assault, stepping each other, people are, gangsterism is over. And these people, when they go out, they quickly come back to prison. Because in prison is safe, they are running the center. What measures are they doing or taking to stop this gangsterism, and so that when the people, they move from jail, they can remain outside, not to have another community who belong to jail up until they die? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masumai. You are brief to the point. I see the Honorable Dodowo, are you able to speak to us? You seem to be having massive issues, but I note your question that you put on the chat group. Honorable Dodowo is asking whether the department has the necessary capacity in technology, human resources, finances, amongst others, to deal with crime and criminal activities inside the prisons. I think this question is similar to also what is raised by other members. I think
I don't know whether you can hear me. If you can I try to ask another question, please?
Yes, Honorable Dodowo, please continue.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Another question. I'm not going to repeat what you just said. Another question relates to, I'm worried about the fact that there are budget cuts, but over and above overcrowding in our prisons, there is another problem, corruption. Corruption among the prison officials, and some of them colliding and colluding with prisoners. It's a big problem. It needs an attention. With this budget, as cut as it is, what is it that the department is going to do in a very, very focused and strategic way to fight this scourge that is perpetuated in our prison? Thank you very much, sir. I have another one, but I'm basically where I am. Thank you very much, Dr. Ibas.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodowo. I think perhaps let me just also ask a few questions from my side as well, Deputy Minister, before I hand over to yourself. I think with regards to gangsterism in correctional services, I think honourable members have touched on this issue, but I think the question is how would the department manage practically to ensure safety of inmates given the high level of overcrowding within correctional facilities. The other issue relates to legislation. What are the legislative gaps that have been identified by the department to address some of the challenges that you face? And also, what upcoming legislation does the department intend introducing? In addition, I think members might have asked this question, but what measures is the department putting in place to prevent the escape of inmates from correctional centres? I know you've always asked the issue of corruption, but I think we also note that in terms of your annual report, with regard to your targets, with regard to discipline, the department, in terms of officials charged for fraud and corruption, the department performance was at 97%, even though your target was at 95%. But in the current financial year, I see the target, I mean the new financial year, the target is still at 95%. Maybe an indication as to why the department is not increasing the target around that. And I think maybe my final question linked to would also be around the morale of GCS officials. Given the high level of overcrowding, how are you also addressing the morale of your officials, and what training programs are being put in place for GCS officials? And I think my final question is around what are the main findings of the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services in respect of the treatment of inmates and ensuring their human rights are protected within correctional centers. I think that's from my side. Deputy Minister, I think I know it's quite a lot of questions, but you know, as members of the SDUP, we come from different provinces. We also have provincial interests at heart when we ask some of these questions. If I can then hand over to yourself, Deputy Minister, then to take us through the responses. Deputy Minister? If you are still with us.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think yes, I'm still with you, Chairperson. Can you still hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
The Chairperson and the member. Oh, yes. I was going to ask that the department take the first bite and then I'll come afterwards in terms of responding to the question.
Okay, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Acting National Commissioner, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and Deputy Minister. We welcome the questions. I am just going to talk to a few and then request through you, Honourable Chairperson, that the members of the management team address other questions that have been asked. The first one I will talk to is the main findings of the Judicial Inspectorate. The main findings are basically on two issues. The first issue is In fact, it's three issues. The first issue is the overcrowding and the fact that it presents capacity problems to the department, but also affects the living conditions of our offenders. The second area is the state of our correctional facilities with regards to dilapidation and also the maintenance program. The third area is the unnatural death and the injuries that are caused by incidents, security incidents in the correctional facility. So those are the three areas that the one can summarize as the main point from the findings of the Judicial Inspectorate. But let me also indicate, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, that we work very closely with the Judicial Inspectorate to address each and every single incident that takes place in our correctional facilities. We report on time, and we provide also the Judicial Inspectorate with the necessary support and also the space for them to do their work without any hindrance. With regards to the legislative
Mr. Commissioner, if I may just interrupt for a moment, because I noticed that the department is using the Correctional Services Management Screen. But what we see from outside is just a green screen, unless it's just myself. But is there a reason why we're just seeing a green screen and we're not seeing anybody?
We are trying to get that fixed, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, but please continue.
Okay. Yes, Honorable Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity to continue. I was going to talk to the gaps that we've identified on legislation and the fact that there is research work that the department is doing on the following issues. Interstate transfer of foreign national offenders, parole period, and the requirements for gender-based violence-related offenses, gender-based violence and femicide. And we have already developed a position paper on the review of the parole system with regard to this. Authority to consider placement on parole of lifers is also part of the document that we've already prepared and submitted to the NCCS. Serving of retired judges also on the National Council for Corrections, the NCCS. Determination of service conditions for DCS employees. And the last area is enhancement of provisions regarding the treatment of inmates and reporting on security incidents in our facilities. Honorable Chairperson, the questions that were asked that are related to facilities, I'm going to request the acting deputy commissioner responsible for facilities, Dr. Gwosa, to respond to those questions. Most of them came from the Honorable Bartlett, and also there was a question from Honorable Bichakli. Also, there were questions on the integrated inmate management system. I'm going to ask Director De Puma to respond to those. There were questions that were asked on the prevalence of gangs in correctional facilities, security incidents, including escapes, and how we are dealing with those. I'm going to request the acting Deputy Commissioner, who's responsible for security, to deal with that. The questions around procurement and the strategy that we are implementing to address budget cuts on goods and services and also on human resources, I'm going to request the acting CFO, Mr. Marumuda, to deal with that. And also the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for human resources. She will also deal with issues of the morale of our officials, the training that is provided, and related human resource issues. The Acting Deputy Commissioner responsible for security is Mr. Somaru. As I've indicated, he will then deal with the security issues. Through you, Honorable Chairperson, can I just request colleagues to respond to the questions briefly?
Please continue.
Thank you, Acting National Commissioner. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Committee members, and also good morning to the Honorable Deputy Minister as well. I will try to be brief, but also to try to answer all the relevant questions. Chair, so the first question related to we need to provide clarity on the projects that is scheduled for completion this financial year in terms of our capital construction projects. So in terms of our annual performance plan, we have one project that is scheduled to finalize this financial year. It is the project at Bobby Hanspoort, the Anton Jenny Youth Center. It's one of the construction, or one of the sites that's currently under construction. And by finishing that project, we'll be in a position to regain around 640 bed spaces. But currently that facility is closed down, but there's a contractor on site, and the public works in terms of their schedule, we were able to finalize that project this financial year. Then, Honorable Chair, in terms of, there was also a question asked in terms of center that's currently closed, that we indicated that is on economical repair. So there's two centers, the one in the Western Cape is shut down. and then there's also one in the Limpopo province as well, Gelukkig. Why we indicated that, Chair, is that if you look at the expense or the cost required to refurbish those centers versus the rationalization of those centers, is very small centers. For example, if you put some at Schwellendam, it's a very small center with a base capacity of less than 100. And if you look at the rationalization and the scale of economy, it's not actually feasible or cost effective to refurbish those two centers. Also taken into consideration, it's very first generation correctional centers, and the alternative to that is just to demolish and rebuild. So there's no prospect of to rehabilitate or refurbish those two centers. One Swellendam and Gelukkig. Then, Chair, there was also a question with regard to the slow progress on the public works projects, and we provided those stats, and I think what's worth noting there is that about 45% of projects covered that was previously allocated to public works in the previous financial years, 45% of those projects is in planning stages for longer than 24 months. So that is really concerned. In total, they have about 56% of their projects is stuck in planning design stages, and they were only able to finalize 17% of their projects in the previous financial year. So in terms of the remedial actions, what we started this financial year, we actually started with the planning the previous financial year to diversify the procurement strategy, and we have appointed additional implementing agents. So we are in the process to hand some of these projects over from the Department of Public Works, for example, to the Development Bank of Southern Africa, but also noting is that the Department of Public Works themselves also is in the process to transfer some of these projects. For example, if you look at the current project in Parijs, that is one of the projects that Public Works already transferred themselves to the Development Bank of Southern Africa. So that is our strategy going forward, is that we realize there's a challenge when it comes to public works execution and implementation, and we're looking for an alternative. But also running parallel to that, Chair, is that we've started to have ourselves credibility and efficiency framework, where there's also reliance on inmate labor and in-house capacity to do small projects in-house, but also big emphasis on maintenance projects. And we had a couple of those projects that was finalized last financial year. We've constructed some structures, but we also did some maintenance on our facilities with the use of inmate labor. And I think the biggest offspring there is also the skills development and transfer to our inmates. And Chair, in terms of, I think there was a question with regard to the success of the integrated security systems. Chair, I think what's worth noting there is that currently public works have a reactive approach when it comes to maintenance that also impacts on our security systems. The previous financial year, 2021-2022, we have implemented contracts in-house, and we have appointed contractors to maintain some of these ISS systems. And I think that the biggest success when we look at those projects is the expenditure versus the estimate that public works have gave us to maintain some of these sites. And we've done that with a quarter of the price for the expenditure that public works has estimated this. So going forward, we will extend that process to see how we can refurbish or maintain some of our security systems. And I think the biggest, the most prevalent approach there is that we're going to maintain these systems rather than replace. And people get to a state that we need to replace, that will be the last solution. Then, Chair, there was also a question with regard to the rest of officials who in polls were. So in terms of the Asbestos Abatement Act 2020, there's some of the immediate actions that you can impose if needed. Although the Act drives to make South Africa asbestos-free society, in the Act there's some provisions made if you can still rehabilitate or seal some of the asbestos structures, bearing in mind there's millions of these structures across South Africa and also international. So the Act made provision that if possible and if it is viable, you can still come to seal some of the asbestos roofing. But the real challenge is if you need to replace, so if the roof is cracked or beyond economical repair or refurbishment, then you need to replace that. but this is an ongoing process, also taking into consideration that there's some other structures nationally as well that was constructed without one of the structures like asbestos and zinc structures, but the issue of falls were there was a project to replace that asbestos roof after assessment was done to say we cannot rehabilitate or seal that asbestos. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We will now proceed to Director Jekuma to deal with the issues of the integrated inmate management system.
Issues that were raised, including the issue of gangsterism.
no problem. But just before you continue, Honorable Mustama, you seem to be sharing your screen now and then with the meeting. Perhaps just be aware of that. Please continue, Acting National Commissioner.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee. Also, good morning to our Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I'm just going to give some information on gangs as well as checks. I must indicate from the onset that the Department is very strong on the principle of prevention and zero incidents. So that is the premise that we start our financial year off with. Now, we are trying to inculcate that in all our officials as well. Prevention and zero incidents. But specifically on gangs, just to indicate that we are engaged in intensive profiling of inmates to determine the gang status and then to implement policies or procedures that will prevent any gang-related incidents. We have developed the gang combating strategy, which we have launched in 2021. We are engaged in intensively also implementing the strategy, but also monitoring the implementation thereof. There is also a review of the SOPs that we have for standing operating procedure, and also deals with gangs in addition to the gang prevention strategy. That is being reviewed on a continuous basis. We also monitor the implementation of the SOPs in relation to gangs. I must indicate to the Select Committee that we have seen a drastic reduction in gang-related incidents, in that we also do not mention it in our APP, but we have it now in our AOP. We are working in collaboration with the South African Police Service and other critical stakeholders from external to assist us in the down-managing of gang-related incidents. Coming to the states, we also try and drive the point very strongly that we must prevent the states. One state is one too much, and therefore we want to also focus on zero when it comes to the states. I must indicate to the committee that we had met our target that we have set for the last financial year in regards to the states. We have seen a reduction of 85% from the previous year. But in regards to re-arrests, we have also re-arrested 59% of those that have escaped last year. So last year we had a figure of 22 that escaped from our facilities, but we have re-arrested 59. I must indicate to the committee that we also have an escape prevention plan in addition to the SOPs that we have. We are also monitoring the implementation of the escape prevention plan. We are also engaged in a continuous review of the SOPs to make sure that we implement measures that are reviewed to try and reduce the escape to a zero. We are continuously involved in training and developing staff in regards to security awareness. Just to indicate, we have a national project that we'll be engaging in, the project of the Acting National Commissioner, where we'll be taking all the unit managers that are working in the center, in the cold face, through the entire security program, so that they are able to buy in and understand the impact of their management and leadership when it comes to managing of security. So that program will be starting shortly in this financial year. We are also hoping to increase our capacity in terms of staff at entry level, as was announced by the Minister in the budget speech of this year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I am now going to request through you, Honorable Chairperson, that the Chief Commissioner responsible for Human Resources deal with the human resource related issues.
Thank you, Honorable
Chairman, Chairperson of the Select Committee and members of the Select Committee, the Honourable Luigi Mendoza, Acting National Commissioner and your colleagues, I'm going to be responding in terms of the HR, which is human resource. I'll start with the question in relation to the staff ratios. Based on the approved findings for the post establishment, I'd like to indicate that in terms of our main recording, the total of the post filled position is sitting at 6,630, that is the correctional service standard. And the vacancies were at sitting at 1,762, which gives us the total of the grand total of 2,392. In line with the approved staff establishment. And in terms of the staff ratio vis-a-vis the inmate population as we're sitting on the 24th of May, we were at 144,653, which gives us a staff ratio of 1.4, which is one official with four offenders or inmates. I will give you a breakdown per region in terms of the ratio. With regards to the province Eastern Cape, which is in our official terms we call it the region, inmate population was sitting at 20, and the number of posts that is in allocated in the approved staff establishment was 4,445, which gives you 4.4%. Free State, Northern Cape, I will not go through all, but in total, the overall is sitting at 4.47%. I would like to answer on the question with regards to the vacancies. In terms of the vacancies, in line with the DGSA and the recruitment strategy of the department plan, break down into a quarterly target as per the approved allocation which we have received within the 13 billion. We are using SMSs that is of a total of 64, which we have broken them down into four quarters. The DPS encouraged us that we must fill positions within 12 months, which is in line with allocation of the one-year financial budget. We have started with the process of filling vacancies. In terms of our national attrition and those that are of retirement, we utilize them to prioritize the filling of vacancies. We have already made submissions in terms of the approval to our executive acting national commissioner and the ministry, and the minister has already given the go-ahead that we will be able to fill those that have been prioritized. We are also looking at level 1 to 12, which is our core in terms of the feeder in line with the allocated budget for making sure that the security is capacitated. In terms of that, there are approvals that already have been made, which we are currently working on making sure that each region, in terms of the docs that are funded, they are able to fill that between the quarter one, which is now, and then the quarter two and quarter three and quarter four. So we are time bound in terms of filling of vacancies in line with the cost allocation. I'd like to also just respond to the question of morale. In terms of the morale, we have worked through the approval of our acting national commissioner and integrated employee health and wellness program that is cutting across all the core and the support program. In that program, it is a program that is assisting in lifting up morale and also improving the performance of employees. One of the indicator that we have in terms of the employee wellness and health is the issues of fitness, encouraging our officials to participate on fitness programs. We already have been approved by our Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister and the Acting National Commissioner to resuscitate the sports in the correctional services, sports and recreation. It has yielded good results since last year, that the morale is actually gradually improving. It's showing the positiveness of the commitment of our officials in various regions in terms of our province, because the app allows participants in sport and is also healthy in terms of physical readiness and fitness. And that is not only that, we are also having a continuous advocacy and awareness program that is dealing specifically with the health, the state of mental of our officials, in line with the debriefing program that is also assisting those who are in the core phase facing challenges, that they are able to be assisted in terms of spiritual care services, that we partner with the branch incarceration, that we are offering spiritual care, not only for risk issues of mental status, but also for COVID related challenges that our officials get to be exposed to. So there are programs that we are waiting on that. We were raised by the leadership of our Honorable Deputy Minister during the launch of our summit on the integrated wellness program, which also is a part of driving the morale. Besides that, on the initial part of the morale, the Acting National Commissioner has approved last year, before the end of this year, the payment of the pay progression and the grading progression, which we were addressing the gap in relation to social workers and nurses in terms of their grading on the OLC payment, which will be during the last part of it during this financial year as we started with that. That has actually assisted in actually boosting morale of our social workers and nurses. They are no longer having the dryness of going and seeking employment outside the correctional service, because we are looking after them. And that is in terms of what we were approved in terms of implementing the morale strategy to improvement plan in line with our integration employee health and wellness. The other part of the health part is the issue that we are continuously encouraging our officials to stay healthy, eating well. We had a program on the weight loss. We had a program on physical fitness. We had also a program on self-defense in terms of empowering women and making sure that they are also safe within our facilities. I just wanted to share all that. But among other in terms of capacity, we're not only looking at the resource in terms of recruitment and filling of vacancies, but we also have been approved for rolling out our training programs in our colleges. We do have our colleges. We continuously enhancing the ESG, which is our special program in terms of our security. We do have a program with regards to the supply chain on ensuring that our officers are also developed. On the issues of OHS, we are also giving a program on training that will also be assisting. So there are various programs that have been approved in line with our skills development work plan that is also assisting on capacitating not the part only of the CEO of the cases, but the development of our officials. And with that, I didn't get to say, we are also adhering to our anti-fraud strategy in dealing with the issues of corruption and in terms of disciplinary procedures that are continuously being addressed. There are a number of officials that we have actually dealt with in terms of dismissal, in terms of the contravening of the various acts that are administrated in the correctional service. So with that, I just want to indicate that we are working hard to ensure that the mandate of the correctional service from the human resource in supporting all the branches and the region, we are able to deliver on the deliverable. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will now request the acting CFO, Mr. Marumula, to deal with the finance issues, but also Deputy Commissioner Marega will then deal with the rehabilitation program allocation, the social reintegration allocation reduction issue, and also the issue of the impact of the poor increases. on our budget.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the Select Committee, and then greetings to the Deputy Minister and also to the Acting National Commissioner and colleagues on the platform. Chair, I'll quickly deal with the three questions that have been raised, specifically starting with the first question that was raised by Honorable Maleka in relation to the risk mitigation of the prevention of irregular fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. Chair, in terms of that particular risk, the department has mitigated the risk in terms of to implement the following, we have enhanced our internal controls, specifically from the procurement point of view to prevent the irregular expenditure by introducing the departmental control committee, chairperson and members. And then the reason behind that, we made an assessment to be able to have an understanding in terms of where are the irregularities, specifically in terms of the irregular expenditure, are taking place. The more often we realize that it's taking place actually within the bracket of the quotations. Hence, we've introduced the departmental control committee per region so that we can be able, even including the head of, so that we can be able to manage that particular process, and then we can be able to help colleagues that are not adhering to those particular policies accountable. We further introduced we've amended some of the aspects on our financial delegation of authority, Chair, to ensure that certain delegations, we manage them so that we can be able to manage the abuse, specifically in terms of to prevent the irregular, fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. We further, in February, Chair, trained our regional head finance in all the regions, specifically in terms of the new supply chain management requirements and reforms, so that we ensure that there's a common understanding and consistency, specifically within the department. Chair, one of the internal control that we've introduced the standard operating procedure for procurement of goods and services in the department, sign off and implemented. And the reason behind, Chair, it was just in terms of the region, we need to be able to acknowledge that we're operating in a fragmented way, where you'll find out from across the region, there's different procurement processes that are followed. So we introduced that particular standard operating procedure within the procurement space so that we can be able to manage that particular process. And there are other introductions here that we are currently implementing in our logistics management space and also the contract management space. So furthermore, lastly, Chair, in terms of what we've also put into place, we received an exemption. One of our challenges is that we've been having irregular expenditure in terms of our perishables and non-perishables due to non-availability of contracts. However, we've worked tight with Treasury, which they now give us actually an exemption to be able, while the department is resolving their contractual obligation. So in relation to the budget cut versus the procurement of goods and services strategy, the department has introduced the demand management plan. And then the reason behind that was to be able to ensure that now the department take advantage of the economic of scale in all the regions when we're procuring goods and services, so that we can be able to take advantage of the pricing, and then so that we can be able to negotiate pricing to ensure that the department pay market related prices, also to be able to start focusing in terms of having actually long-term contracts in this particular transaction, so that we can be able to start negotiating prices, as has been indicated during the presentation of the budget, that we've got a firm budget under goods and services, and we can be able to operate with that particular budget that has been introduced. And the other important aspect, Chair, that was raised was the issue relating to the example that was made by one of the honorable members relating to the long processes of procurement, and he made an example about subs. In that particular space, Chair, the department battled a little bit in terms of actual special long procurement, but what we've introduced, Chairperson, in that particular space is that we Also, we were affected by the constitutional court outcome, but then we had to sit with Treasury, which now they granted the department actual exemptions in writing through the national commissioner, where we can be able to operate in that particular space. And furthermore, we're finalizing the enhancement of our committees so that we can be able to ensure that we've got actually a turnaround time, specifically in those particular committees, so that we can be able to introduce actually a quick turnaround time in that particular space. And then in lastly, under that particular space of the long process of procurement, we also, within our supply chain management in the head office, introduce the key account manager, which will be coordinating and ensuring that whatever that is in our procurement plan is enforced and is implemented, even vis-a-vis whatever is in our demand plan, so that we can be able to track progress and status and be able to help colleagues accountable. That is included actual items in the procurement plan. And you find that actually there's no action that has been taken place to be able to execute this particular procurement requirements that have been introduced to the procurement plan. So I'll stop there, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I will address the three questions on two on the allocations of program rehabilitation and also program social reintegration. And the last one on the issue of fuel increases and its impact in our operations or in our budget allocations as a department. With regards to the mental service rehabilitation, you will recall, Chair, that when we were presenting the average growth of the five programs over the MCF, we indicated that program rehabilitation is one of the two programs where we have an average growth that is above 3%, and for program rehabilitation it is 3.6%. And it's a conscious decision as a department that we continue to take that amidst the budget cuts, but we do not want to flesh that much from program rehabilitation. But within the program allocation, we then reprioritize, as we also indicated, that for the recapitalization program on implementation of the self-sufficiency framework, we reprioritize an amount of about 54.1 million on a budget. And in turn, if you look at our COE indicators, the constraint was that of vision, but with regard to program three, it's one of the programs where we did not cut over this MTEF, the COE allocations translating into actual personnel numbers. Over the 2022 MTEF, program three, will gain about 93 posts that will be reprioritized for the self-sufficiency framework so that we then improve. And at the end of the day, there will be benefits if we successfully implement in terms of spending less in terms of outside procurement to internal provision at the department. On program social reintegration, there is a decrease of allocations over the MCEF, indicated that it's one program out of the five programs that over the MCEF overall has a negative average growth, which is 3.7%. And mainly under program social reintegration, the cut is around compensation of employees. It is a tough balancing act, Chair, when you are faced with overall budget cuts, especially around COE as a department, and then in the case, for example, in the last NTF cycle program, five, which is program social reintegration, was one of the programs that consciously the department increased the personnel number. But unfortunately, if we then look at the unaudited actual performance, expenditure performance for the 2021 financial year, it is a program where we have huge savings under COE. So what we then did was maybe we pumped too much in that particular program of social reintegration in terms of personnel numbers to rent allocation. We then revised down the allocation over the MTF for COE and reprioritized it in the main to program rehabilitation and slightly to program care. Because if you then look at the COE performance in the 2021-2022 financial year, program 5, underspent by almost over 200 million. So we understand the importance of the program, but at the end of the day, the accounting officer has got to make sure that whatever is allocated in any program, in any sub-program, must be fully spent by the end of the financial year. And in that regard, then program social integration also by the NPS and over the period, we then have a reduction of personnel numbers of about 307 over the NGF. The last question on the fuel increases and its impact check, it does affect the department. In the main, in DCS, the fuel impact is in fleet services, as much as the outsourcing participation like other national and provincial departments in the transversal contract treasury, and also in our case on the line item of fuel and oil. And if you look at those two allocations in the 2021 financial year, we had budgeted an amount of 317 million. And the actual expenditure unaudited at the end of March, and that we submitted to AGM February yesterday, we spent 390 million. Effectively, what it means then is that the accounting officer has got to reprioritize from certain other line items across all these 5 programs to be able to supplement the budget allocation. But what we did when we're preparing the 2022 MTF budget, we looked at this high spending line item where the inflation adjustment that we get on our baseline as provided by National Treasury is way lower than the reality in terms of the actual inflation adjustments that we experience as a department. We then consciously reprioritize from other line items to supplement the item on these services and also the item on inventory fuel. And if you then look year on year, 2021-22 at baseline allocation and 2022-23 allocation that we present to the select committee consciously, then the accounting officer increased those two line items by an average of 9.8%. And our budget did not increase by 9.8%. What it means is that there are certain line items that in year we have to still closely monitor, because then they will then face severe constraints for them to reprioritize the budget. Unfortunately, if you look at the MTF framework that is provided to accounting officers, both the MTF guideline and the EME guideline, it's very clear that there is just a line item where National Treasury indicates to all of us that if at any rate any line item increases way over what has been provided for in the estimated inflation adjustment, then each department must then self-finance within a to reprioritize. So on one hand, you don't want that an accounting officer to have a lot of violence, but on the other hand, you're faced with reality that you've got line items that, especially in the setup of DCS, that you cannot afford not to properly fund. Even if you can see that I'm overspending on these line items, you cannot stop operations, you cannot say offenders must not, or inmates must not go to hospitals, or offenders must not go to court, you cannot say that. So it is quite a tough balancing check, but overall what we do as a department is to ensure that we stick and play by the rules as stated in the Patent Act and the current regulations, 6, Patent Act Section 43, within the powers of the accounting officer, in terms of organizing the budget, and where it is then in the delegation enacted in the Appropriation Act of the Minister of Finance, which delegated those powers to the DG of National Treasury, then on time or in time we do communicate with National Treasury and advise where in extreme circumstances would have then to reprioritize from machinery and equipment to the operational goods and services. It is highly concerned to get any out of the National Treasury our goods and services. This part of the Shania, the goods and services, after the privatization, after violence, the line item overspend, and mainly the high cost drivers there, which is fuel, food services, and the medicine and line item for the thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon to the members of the committee, honorable members of the committee, and also to the Honorable Deputy Minister of Correctional Services. I'll be responding to the question on the management of the overcrowding of the remand detainees in the Department of Correctional Services. I think I would like first to put this in perspective, just to explain the population of the remand detainees. Within the population of remand detainees in the Department of Correctional Services, more than 80% are detained without an option of bail. And more, just below 15% are here without any bail. And amongst those with bail, there are those, amongst those that are here without bail, there are those that are also in the bail application phase. So for the Department of Correctional Services, there are limited strategies for reducing the population of the remand detainees. Correctional Services on its own cannot reduce the population of the remand detainees without the involvement of the courts. So the Department of Correctional Services has got two main strategies that they use. But those strategies also, they only apply to the limited number of remand detainees. That is the remand detainees that are detained in the and those that are detained for above 2 years. But even the above 2 years, they constitute 10% and below in some of the regions. So which means a greater population, the Department of Correctional Services cannot do anything except to keep them and ensure that they go to court. But what we do then, with the limited strategies that we implement, we monitor the population. Since our remand detainees, they kept on changing. Some are released, they don't come back. And of those that pay bail also, there is that release that takes place through those that pay bail. So, but the population has been reducing since 2020. 2020, we observed the highest population. Our highest was May, where our population was 57,000. But since then, the population has been gradually reducing. That is from 57,000 in May, and then by March 2022, the average population was around 46,000. But for 2021-2022, the average population is even below 46,000, which is a good drop for correctional citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The last response will be from the Deputy Commissioner responsible for strategic management. It will be on the targets that were reduced, and also the reasons for targeting around targeting on 90% instead of 100%. But before that, I thought I must just speak to the issue of the psychologists, social workers, and the healthcare services. Workers within the
recording in progress.
A remand detainee. What we are doing now, in as much as we are finalizing the implementation of the human resource budgeting tool as dictated to by Treasury, is to ensure that where there are vacancies of nurses and doctors, we fill all those, and also to ensure that where there are vacancies of social workers, psychologists, we also fill those. We are hard hit by the fact that there is high mobility of these professionals within government. And so in as much as we feel them, we also lose them to the respective departments, Department of Health in provinces and also the Department of Social Development. So at the moment, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we are making it a point that we also take advantage of the presence of the auxiliary workers in this space, and we bring them into our correctional facilities, and also when we then fill the posts, we recruit from that pool. So that assists us to sustain our intervention in that regard. I will then hand over to you, Honorable Chairperson, to CDC Strategic Management for the last response. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Good afternoon, Chairperson of the Select Committee and honourable members of the Select Committee, Deputy Minister, National Commissioner, all protocol observed. If we can start with the target of overcrowding, we will remember in the 2019 and 2020 year, we implemented the special remission and the special parole dispensation. And through that process, our overcrowding rate actually decreased substantially from about 38% down to about 28%. But over the last year, we've seen a steady increase growth in the inmate population. And in addition to that, we've also lost some bed spaces due to the remeasurement of bed spaces at our correctional facilities, as well as due to dilapidation and lack of maintenance. So we have lost bed spaces in addition to the fact that the inmate population has grown. So at the end of the 21-22 financial year, overcrowding was actually standing at 31.6%, and that is what has informed our target of 32%. So the target of 28% was actually not achieved at the end of the financial year, and therefore we set the targets in the ACT accordingly. The likelihood now is that target of 32% is going to go higher, looking at the fact that we're seeing a steady increase in the inmate population. If you also refer to page 48 of the ACP document itself, it will also give you the inmate population trends. You will see the downward movement after the special remission and special parole dispensation, and then again the slow upward movement over the next financial year. Then if I can quickly go to the target of the screening for hypertension and diabetes. So due to the COVID-19 outbreak, we've actually prioritized now the screening of vulnerable inmates. So those with diabetes and hypertension, for example, as a monitoring mechanism. So the challenge we have currently is that we do have a lack of medical practitioners across various regions. But our professional nurses are actually then filling in those gaps in terms of providing the primary healthcare services to inmates. Now, although we targeted 90%, we have achieved more than that. But when we look at our resource constraints and when we look at the growing inmate population, the target of 90% is one that we know that we can achieve. And the last target that we want to discuss is the one on inmates, officials charged and found guilty of corrupt activities. So there, although we achieved 97%, we set a target of 95%, mainly due to the fact that we rely on receiving adequate evidence where we are going to lay charges against officials. And we also rely on the testimony of various people, officials and others to basically be able to, to do the necessary prosecution in that area. So, and we don't always have control over those issues, over the evidence as well as the witnesses. So although, we always strive to ensure that we have sufficient prima facie evidence, there are cases when we may not always have that. So we know the target of 95% is something that we can, again, easily achieve with looking at the fact that we don't have the required investigators that we need. So we're also working within those resource constraints. And I'm just going to hand over to CDC, who is going to talk about the risk of the records management.
Thank you, Chair and members. I think the question was around the strategic risk of records management in the departments. We are currently implementing a records management framework, which looks at how we structurally manage the hard copy documents within the correction space, within the correctional centers. And there's also a project that we are engaging with our colleagues in IT in terms of how we are going to digitize some of the records that we have in order for us to be able to archive electronically. So there is an active project that is going on that is mitigating that risk. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, also our Chief Minister. This is where we end with the responses in line with the questions that were asked, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, I don't know if you have a parting shot, but let me first just see with Honourable Members, because I think the department did cover quite a bit of ground and did respond to, I think, majority of the questions. Is there any follow-up or an urgent follow-up? I would allow for one or two members there. But if not, then Deputy Minister, I think...
Yes, but everything is before I make any... I think shots. I thought there was a question coming from your sense relating to what legislative measures do we have in the pipeline in order, among other things, to improve our performance. I thought the official responsible for legal services might address that.
Okay, yeah, I know the department did respond to policy issues, but yeah. Maybe if we can respond to that, but okay, before that, because I see two members have raised their hands. I think Honourable Mutetwa, I didn't hear anything about the vehicles, but Honourable Mutetwa?
You really spot on, Chair, because on my question, I just wanted to know the correctional service in terms of this procurement, which is more of a centralized. How is it affecting them? If they are, is not affected, how are they doing? How are they performing on those lines? That is, was my question, Chair, because this is a one security cluster. It might assist us the experience of the... Thanks, Chair.
Thanks,
Honourable
Chair.
Mr. Lai?
Yes, Chairperson.
I wanted to ask a question, but let me make it a follow-up, because I was asking about the gangsterism that is taking place within the centers. Now, I met with the acting national commissioner about the issue of the whistleblowers, where the whistleblowers within their centers are being dismissed from work, exposing the corruption.
At the later stage, they went to court, and the court granted those people a permission to return back to court to work and going to work. And within that, they were not even, because the correctional service authorities or senior officials, they don't respect the court orders. Those people are not even now working. And when you go to the private prison in Kutamas in Tumule, people also were removed from work. When they were supposed to return to work with the court orders, nothing is happening. I wrote questions and asked why they don't take these court orders very seriously. I speak to the national commissioner, the acting national commissioner now, but nothing is happening. I want to know why they come to us and look for the budget. And this side, they are retrenching our people. When they went to court, the court instruct them to return the people back to work, and nothing is happening. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Aromatumai. That is a new question, not necessarily a follow-up, but I think that the department can respond to that. I think there are just three issues then, Deputy Minister, if we can get responses, and then you can close from your side. So legal. And maybe the commissioner, the acting national commissioner, to deal with the other two issues, the issue of the vehicle procurement, and the issue of the whistleblowers that Honourable Motumai has raised.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with the issue of the procurement of vehicles, the various types of and categories of vehicles that you procure in the department. We were from the total allocation that is available for procurement of vehicles, would then look at the asset register of all vehicles and their categories in the department, and then look at the age of those vehicles in each region and allocate the budget of procurement of vehicles in line with the age of the vehicle, not necessarily equally. So what would do if, for example, Free State Northern Cape region has got the most old vehicles, would then allocate more to prepare for the replacement of those vehicles, and in certain particular years, what would do would then top slice for particular categories of vehicles. For example, if we are in need of refrigerator trucks, would not apply that principle, but what we would do would then actually interact with all regions that would give us their specific needs, and then we would then top up their allocation per region for that particular category of vehicles. And since COVID started, Chair, we had delays in the delivery of vehicles, because when it's your vehicles, we participate in the transversal contract that is the national treasure. But the 2021-22, there have been delays in the procurement of vehicles, specifically because of the supply chain backlog on chips. So at some point in time, we're then to indicate to regional officers for them to actually physically go to the various dealers that are part of the transversal contract, so that we can then see whatever they needed. If, for example, they had ordered from Toyota the 4x2, the 4x4, and there are delays there, then within a reasonable time, if the service provider is not able to commit, or they keep on postponing the delivery period, would then indicate that they need them to engage that particular service provider, cancel the order only when the other dealers would have committed to say that they will be able to deliver before the 15th of March, so that we are able to pay by the end of March. So we had those particular delays. So the budget allocation for vehicles, there's been underselling in the last financial year, but this financial year there's going to be a change in how we're procuring. Instead of the allocation being given to the various regions, all procurement for vehicles, all categories will be done centrally, and but with deliveries taking place to the relevant management area. But also in that regard, we are informed by the state of these vehicles as recorded in our asset registers. And normally the priority that we normally give is vehicle categories that talk to the nutritional services, the delivery thereof, and also vehicles that are to transport offenders to and from hospitals, courts, and correctional centers. We also prioritize to share the community correction services. And depending on which region we are buying, we then also prioritize whether we buy the 4x2s or normal systems, and also the people who are buying the vehicles. A limited number is for trucks, because we have fresh produce that needs to be transported to certain management areas where they are farmed. They do not only spend for their own needs in terms of the farm produce, they also supply other neighboring management areas, so we need to ensure that we have suitable trucks to transport the fresh produce and also from abattoirs to the relevant management area. So we do look at those issues and check when we prioritize what labels and what categories and which management areas are to procure, of course limited by the funding. It's one area that we work very sharply over the few financial years in the international treasury to say, if you look within this JCTF cluster at the allocation of vehicles, correctional services, I don't even think our allocation is even a percentage of what staff is having and what is having. So it's one area that we had put before MTSD to say we need a conscious investment outside DCS allocation to address this specific area. But unfortunately, we have never been successful in getting those funds, pushing us to always protect the baseline allocation for vehicles, because we are dealing with an aged fleet in the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The last two issues I'm going to request the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for human resources to deal with them. To indicate that the department we did, specifically the Office of the National Commissioner, did respond to correspondence from Honourable Musamai on the specifics with regard to the officials from Modavi who were dismissed, and to also indicate that the case is still under review in court. I must also add, Honourable Chairperson, that where in instances where our own officials are the ones that are providing information with regard to corruption or wrongdoing in our correctional facilities, we actually protect them and ensure that they are not intimidated at all. The case of Mondavi, the case that one had to even investigate, was the case that took place years ago. And I must indicate that if there are issues also to be raised with regard to those specific cases, the department and the Office of the National Commissioner is still willing to deal with those issues as they are raised. I'm going to request through Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, that the CDCHR deal with the issue of legislation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Commissioner, Honourable Deputy Minister, and Chairperson of the Select Committee. I will not go back to the question because the ICAC has responded. The matter is under such debate. And I will just want to talk on the matter of the amendment of the Correctional Service Act in terms of the two approaches. The first phase we already completed, which we have already appeared before the next committee,
when the correctional service minister amendment bill, in terms of the partial judgment and the definition of the minister, that was completed. The second phase, in terms of the JIC, is the review of the reminder of the Correctional Service Act and its regulations in terms of the provision on the parole offenders and also provision concerning the JIC. I just want to indicate that the plan in terms of the phases, which we want to indicate that we have made progress and we are currently consulting with various stakeholders in relation to address the process of the amendment to the JIC. One of the elements that is just on the last step on the bill itself is the issue about the allocation of the financial model in terms of the separation of powers between the correctional service accounting side and also for them to be independent, having their own accounting officer. We have just presented at the DEFCOM and we are currently further consulting with various stakeholders in order for us to prepare further submissions, also to yourself, which we will be able to present before the timeline that was set by cabinet. So I just want to indicate that we have made progress on the amendment of the JIC, and we are just finalizing the consultation, but cabinet memo document, which was also tabled at the DEFCOM last week, we have just finalized that. So I just needed to indicate that. But on the legislative part, the acting national commissioner already has given amongst others, part of what will be requiring the amendment of the legislative review. The last aspect is the legislative part on the performance. When you read the Correctional Service Act together with all other legislation in terms of the DPSA, it is also driving the performance of the department in terms of all the work that we are doing, which we then report on the quarter on the monthly basis, while we are also doing the departmental governance reporting and also the issue of official performance being managed through the tools in terms of the legislation and also in terms of the performance management that we are currently using as a system that assists us to monitor the performance. Thank you, Chairperson, and over to you, HTN.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. That will be all in terms of the last three questions that we had to deal with. Thank you for the opportunity, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, do you have anything you would want to add?
No, Chairperson, I don't have much to add except to merely emphasize the obvious, which is that the constrained space that we are in as a country in terms of finances affects everybody and every department, and DCS is no exception. We are forced as government to do what is now known as reprioritizing, which means we take resources from one program in order to augment those resources in another program, resulting in the creation now of a gap. That gap itself has to be filled somehow, resulting in people taking on more responsibilities than they are required to in terms of the arrangement in the department. For instance, I think it was the Honorable Mikalakis who said something about the department having to be aware at all times that we are corrections, not prison. We did mention in our presentation that we are aware of the fact that we have to concentrate on rehabilitation of offenders, but at the same time we have to keep them secure and safe, and the officials, most of them that we have, are not necessarily trained in order to deal with rehabilitation matters as they are security officials. And therefore, that is why I'm talking about officials now, employees, having to take on responsibilities that were not necessarily meant to be carried out by themselves. So that it is under the condition, therefore, that we also find some of the people escaping. There could be a number of reasons. One of them could be that there were not adequate numbers of officials to make sure that the prisoners are not in a position to escape. Also, the question of the maintenance, the need of the maintenance of the facilities. Some of these facilities, as honorable members are aware, are in need of serious repair and maintenance. As a result, some of the escapees take advantage of the fact that there are some parts of the facilities that are easy to break down so that they can escape. It is in this context then that we are pleased as a ministry that in our discussions with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, we have come to an agreement that a number of maintenance and repair responsibilities can be carried out by ourselves as a department without us having to rely on the PWI, who in effect themselves tend to rely on outside partners to do some of the work. Hence, we also are working closely with CSIR and DBSA and also IGT to ensure that we deal directly with them instead of having the middleman, that is the DPWI. It is our hope, therefore, that with this new arrangement, we are going to perform better than we've been doing in these areas that we've been seen to be weak on. Thank you again, Chairperson, for engaging us and for advising us through the form, through the questions that you are posing, and also on suggestions that you're making so that we can improve on the delivery of our mandate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, the Acting National Commissioner, and your entire management team. For this detailed presentation, as well as the addition of providing information and additional information requested, but also for your responses to members' questions and concerns, and the information that you've provided us will further be used as a committee as we embark on oversight work as a committee, but also as individuals within our various provinces. As you indicated, Deputy Minister, the challenges with budget constraints, and we acknowledge that this results in challenges in the department, particularly in relation to infrastructure, head space, and overcrowding in the correctional centres. We would encourage the department to reprioritize your budget to enforce more stringent cost containment measures and work with other government departments to resolve the challenges and to ensure that despite these challenges, inmates are treated with dignity. But also that the correctional service officials receive the necessary capacity and support for them to perform their duties adequately. As I indicated, Deputy Minister, we will engage in oversight over correctional centres to make further observations on the conditions of these centres, on issues of staffing and overcrowding. And with that said, let me once again thank you very much for your attendance and for your participation in this meeting, and to also thank the honourable members for the engagement. Deputy Minister, we would release yourself and your team because we still have another agenda item to dispense of as a committee. So please feel free to can leave the platform, but if you're willing to remain in our meeting, you're also welcome to do that. Thank you very much. Our members, we'll put the next item of the agenda, which is the budget and ABP report, the Home Affairs report. Members would have received copies of this report, I think, presenting last week. I think just in terms of the report itself, you'll note that we reflect the discussions or responses by the minister or the department. The issues we raised were around the ward queue, the suspension, unemployed youth, digitization of records, media engagement in rural communities, the biometric management system, issues with regard to the northern borders, that's Northern Cape to Cape and N. Service delivery, the issue of passports, budget allocation to provinces, the targets for the smart identity documents, the people's presentation is well ahead of me. The vacancies, the issues around GBVF awareness raising, law enforcement inspections, permanent resident application target, fraud and anti-corruption, the border management authority, staff morale in relation to the border management authority, the Coast Border Post, I think those were quite a few issues that we engaged with the department, and we made certain recommendations in the report as well. And if I could just go through the recommendations that we expressed our concern in respect of the long queues with the officers of the department and encouraged it to implement its short, medium and long-term plans in respect of the long queues to address this matter with speed, to ensure effective and efficient service delivery, and that the department should continue to implement the measures that are currently working in all provincial offices. The department should move with speed in rolling out its pilot plan of booking a space to all provinces in order to be able to fight the long queues that are experienced by the citizens when visiting home affairs offices. Committee members welcome the digital implementation plan on the Border Management Authority, BMA, Border Management Authority. Members recommended that the department should strictly adhere to the plan in order to ensure that the BMA is implemented within the stipulated time frame and provide regular updates to the committee. The BMA should start a process of fully engaging all those who are working within the border process to avoid any negative pushbacks or conflicts that may arise. The department should maximize its assets to address fraud and corruption, and work closely with the relevant law enforcement agencies to ensure that arrests are made speedily. The department should work towards digitization of its manual documents and address challenges it has in respect of IT capacity, which will further contribute towards efficient service delivery in all provinces. The department should continue to curb illegal migration through its law enforcement operations by working collaboratively with law enforcement agencies and with the community. The department should also closely monitor the private airstrips if there are those illegal migrants who are entering the country through those. The department should find lasting solutions to the filling of vacancies and continue to collaborate with the institutions of higher learning and to use interns to fill posts. The department should address this as a matter of urgency, particularly in respect of the filling of vacancies of frontline staff. The department should continue to roll out more mobile units as this will increase the reach of the department in rural areas and ultimately improve service delivery. The department should ensure that every effort is made to work speedily on reopening the closed border post and to redevelop the border post because identified in the APP. The department should ensure that it makes every effort to reduce the turnaround time for the issuance of passports, and the department should continue its awareness raising initiatives in respect of gender-based violence and transfer, and ensure that officials receive the necessary information as well. So remember, this is the report. I take it that you would have had sufficient time to go through it. I wish to request if there are any additions and or corrections that you would want to make to the report. If you can give me an indication. If not, if members feel that you should adopt the report, if there's a move for the report, then any second. Nicolás, are you moving?
Chairperson, well, I just want you to please note from our side, we at this stage don't have a final mandate with regards to the budget itself. So we would like to, with regards to these reports at this point, we will have to abstain, if that can just be noted, please.
So that'll be yourself, Honourable
Sister,
and Honourable
Slick. That is
any, yeah, okay. Noted. Any moves for the
other? That is correct, Chair. That is precisely correct, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honourable Bartlett? Sure. Okay, I think she's not on the platform. I remember if I can get a vote for the report. I...
Chair, I move for the...
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, and yeah, are there any abstentions and objections besides what Honourable Nicholas has indicated? Okay, if none, anyway, the report is duly adopted, Honourable Members. And then, Honourable Members, that was the final agenda item. Let me release you. I understand that there's a chairperson meeting or chair of chairs meeting at 1, which gives some of us like no time to actually get something to eat. But be that as it may, Honourable Members, thank you very much for your attendance, participation in the meeting, and this meeting is declared.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.